I'm Robert Schwartz. I'm a parent of a 10th grade girl at Camp Belinda High School.
Okay, and you are also part of that.
I'm co-chair of the Campo Parent D&I group.
Okay.
And I'm Ann Nofziger. I'm co-chair with Rob of the Parent D&I, Campo Parent D&I, and I have a junior son at Campo now, and I have a daughter that's a sophomore in college that went to Campo.
Awesome. Making sure we got good levels. We do. Okay, so talk about... are you both the founders of the DEI group?
Or? No. I mean, the founder was, it's a group of parents, but really led by Elodie Smith, who's currently, what's her title, like VP of...
Communications for the Camp of Parents overall, right?
Right. Yeah. Community engagement,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she's still very involved. But last year, during the summer, summer 2020, after George Floyd, the racial reckoning, everything, you know, Elodie spoke at the Moraga rally, got probably about 150 parents calling into the initial call, and then it's kind of just taken off from there.
Yeah. So last year was the first year of this more formal Campo Parent D&I group, and we developed certain subcommittees to deal with specific issues, to address the belonging and inclusion issues at Campo. And had just incredible participation from parents at the school to help with the work. And we put on book clubs and parent ed courses. And we were able to put in place a new pledge for the sports programs and a new pledge for the school. And we, you know, assisted and coordinating with the district and making it clear that there's how important it was to hire someone at the district level to deal with wellness and diversity issues, and Dr. Harris was hired over the summer to take that role at the district. So we had a lot of really great success in our first year, and now we're going to continue it into the second year.
Cool. So in my day job, many reporters, I work at St. Mary's College. I'm the director of the Center for Women and Gender Equity, and a lot of college students are, especially students of color, students of marginalized identity, have a certain perspective about Moraga.
Mm-hmm.
And about it being a place that doesn't welcome diversity, doesn't care about inclusion, doesn't value these kinds of issues. I would love you to, I'm sure you've heard narratives like this or assumptions like this. What do you want people to know about Moraga and the direction of people like you who are doing this kind of work?
You can jump in too. I think there are a lot of people in the Campo community and in the community generally that care about these issues. And I think what the issue has been, that there's just been a lack of engagement around these issues. And it's not a lack of caring about them necessarily, but people just haven't been engaged. And I think what's happened over the last couple of years in our culture generally, and, you know, with some specific things that happened around students at Campo, parents became more aware that we need to be talking about these issues and getting more involved in them. So I don't know that I think this could be a tough place, but I do think it's not a lack of interest, it was just a lack of engagement initially.
And there's people that do care, right?
Yeah, like there are people.
Yeah, I mean, and the bottom line is, like, perception is reality. So the way people experience it, we can't deny that that's their experience that they're having here. And I think we have for a long time been denying and saying, no, it's not true. That's just a small fringe group. Well, when the small fringe group is really loud, when they're doing things that are hateful, that bring a lot of publicity, that magnifies, very, very negative publicity, that magnifies the perception of what Moraga is. And I do think, you know, agreeing with Anne, like, that there's just an increase in engagement now around these issues. And that it's changing. It's going to take time, but it is changing.
Like, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, I'll finish reading and then we'll get into it. So, and then it says at dnicampo.com, or dnicampo.com is the following. This year, the Campo Parent D&I group will push on issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion and belonging based on gender, race, and sexual orientation and their intersectionality in the classroom, on the sports field, on campus, and in the community. So it's interesting, it's like,
right.
Who would argue with that?
Yeah.
CRT is a Marxist-derived philosophy in which the world's people divide into oppressors and oppressed. See, Wikipedia.
Yeah. He wrote this, is directly from his...
A review of critical theory from the Frankfurt Group and critical race theory, and an introduction by Delgado and another scholar. You can gain an understanding of the worldview from Campo's definitions. And then he's citing D&I Campo resources. where you will find the following terms defined: cisgender, diversity, equity, gender identity, group, BIPOC, diversity, implicit bias, power, privilege, race, whiteness, microaggression, structural racism, white privilege, and others. So it's like a...
Yeah.
So tell me more. Like, this kind of stuff has been posted on Nextdoor, and you were saying that you weren't surprised.
No, I mean, I think it's just trying to foment dissent.
Yeah.
I also think, like Anne was talking...
I'll put this closer to the TV.
There's so much momentum in the school right now for work around diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. It's the students first and foremost. It's the teachers. It's most of the teachers. It's the admin. It's the board, the AUHSD board, who's almost all aligned. It's the staff at AUHSD at the district that are all aligned. And there's all this momentum, and I think people are like, oh my God, like, people on the other side are like, oh my God, like, we're losing our grasp on, like, what we believe this school should be doing. But the train's left the station. Like, there's a boulder rolling down the hill right now, and, like, where we're trying to go as a parent group now is really empowering the students and working in partnership with the teachers and the admin and the district to say, how can we help accelerate this work? How can we keep you accountable to it? And how can we just ensure that this is the direction that we continue to move?
Right. Yeah.
You're having a thought.
And I think that the reality is that the students, the admin, the parents, we're doing the work. We're actually on committees. We're doing the work. We're creating seminars for parent education. We're engaging with students, having them come to our quarterly town hall, you know, our every quarter town hall to present to the parents what's happening on campus. We're actually in there doing the work. A small minority of people in town are going to the board meetings and screaming about this and writing letters to the editor in a local paper to complain about this. But they're not the majority of the people here. The majority of the people are actually wanting this to be happening in our school, think it's important, understands that there's been a lack of belonging for a lot of students in our high schools for a long time, and that lack of belonging often stems around issues of race, gender, sexual identity, and other things. So we, you know, we're doing the work, and we're going to continue to do the work. And if people want to scream and complain about it, Rob's right. This work's not stopping. We're going to continue to do it.
Yeah, you said the train's lost the station, and you said some people really want things to be the way that they think it should be. How do you think that they think it should be?
I mean, it should be the way that it was 20 years ago and 30 years ago. And
how do you think it was 20 or 30 years ago?
I mean, not much different than it was in the last 2 years even, but like where students who, or people in general who are traditionally successful in the current model, so generally like white, affluent, boys more than girls, that are successful, that they should be, that all the structures and systems and curriculum and practices that have been there need to stay. Because it worked for me, therefore it should be working for everybody else.
Got it, yeah. So, you know, like colleges across the country, high school, it's like a model of moving away from, like, white supremacy is kind of deeply embedded in the system. So this sounds like steps to get into a more holistic representative education.
Right, and kids are not, I mean, some family, as we all know, there are some people that buy their parents' house and stay in Moraga their whole lives, but there are a lot of these kids are not going to stay in Moraga the rest of their lives, and they need the tools to be able to either live in Moraga and be a good citizen in this town or to go out and live somewhere else and be somewhere else. And if they leave here, they're likely going to be in a more diverse community, and they need to understand diversity and issues and inclusion issues. And, you know, it baffles me that anyone would think that it's inappropriate to talk to kids about, you know, making Campo a more inclusive place for all the students. It baffles me that would be a negative in the eyes of any parent in this community.
Yeah, I mean, that's the really interesting thing for me in this piece that we're looking at. If with a different heading, this could almost be just an informational statement, because he's just pulling quotes. Like, I think this person seems like they're expecting to alarm people by saying that the high school is going to give, they're defining cisgender. What does cisgender mean? It means that if you're male, you appear male, right? Like, what does diversity, gender equity, like, he's basically pulling quotes off of the website as if this would be upsetting. So it's, I don't know, how prevalent do you feel like this kind of perspective is now, and how much are you hearing from folks?
I mean, I don't think it's incredibly prevalent. I think the vast majority of parents don't care one way or the other.
Indifferent.
I think the vast majority are indifferent. Not the vast majority. I think that there's a large sector that are indifferent. They're like, Campbell's getting my kid to college. That's what it's there to do.
Yeah.
They're going to tweak here and there. That's fine. But the experience that my kid has is going to be the same. I think that there's a large growing percentage of families like us who are like, no, like, Campo is good. We can help make it better. And that's what we're focused on. And then there's other folks who are like, no, Campo is great exactly the way it was. It always has been, and we need to keep it that way.
Right.
And that's a smaller and probably shrinking perspective.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that, you know, last year when we had parent ed events with Dr. Watson, it was the same one or two people that came and try and, you know, and would disrupt, and it's the same people that, you know, went to the AUHSD board meeting 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. You can look at the video from that meeting that are saying the same thing that's in this op-ed.
Will you send it to me?
Yeah, we can send you the link. I feel confident that we, and as what I said earlier, we've got people actually doing the work, actually being productive and actually engaging in the work. That's what moves it forward. And I think it's a very small number of people that are very vocal, and they're getting more attention than they probably should get because they're just being so vocal about it. And but I don't think it's a huge group.
We honestly don't spend a ton of time on them. Yeah. Like, people will send like, oh, look what so and so said on this social media platform, or, and we're like, yeah, let them scream into the wind. But like, we're going to keep doing the work. We're going to keep moving everything forward.
Right. And the district's committed to it. This isn't just a Campo thing.
Yeah.
This guy's calling out the Campo D&I site. We're articulating what we're doing and what we're engaged in. But we have the backing of the district.
And the state. I mean, the state just passed the ethnic studies requirement.
Right.
You know, Campo started that last year, not as a requirement, but as an elective. It's growing, and I do think people are like losing a grasp on the way that they think that the world's supposed to be, and now all they know how to do is to scream about it.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned some of the kids here aren't going to stay here; they're going to move on to other places. Also, my friends moved here from Egypt a couple of years ago. Their daughter chose to come to Campo, so I suspect you have more and more people of diverse backgrounds coming into the district.
Well, I mean, if we look at, when you look at the term critical race theory, very few people are going to argue that schools should teach kids to think critically, and very few people are going to argue that schools should teach kids different theories and how to, like, examine a theory and look for evidence off that. So what is it all about? It's about the word race. And, like, that's the issue that people have. So whether it's CRT or whether it's something else, like, this is what they've chosen to glom onto because that's the narrative that's being pushed by media, that, like, that's what people should fear.
And why do you think people are so afraid of race? Just based on, I mean, you're not speaking for everybody, but just from your own perspective, why do you think that's such an inflammatory term?
I mean, I think people are afraid that they're going to lose their share in society, that their kids are not going to have the same privileges and opportunities that they had, because it's being taken, because it's a limited pie, and there has to be, like, their slice has to be the biggest piece of it.
When you said people, we're talking about white people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, and I'm a white person.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think that's exactly right. I think it's people afraid that they're going to lose what they have, and not understanding that bringing everyone up with you makes a better culture, makes a better town, makes a better high school. So it's rather than understanding and seeing the benefits of rising people up, they see it as a threat to their standing.
So you're both white. You're doing this work from the position of allies. Why? Why is it important for white people to be doing this work?
Well, I mean, personally, like, I've spent the last 25 years, like, working in communities of color and education. So, like, I've worked in East Los Angeles, I've worked in South Los Angeles, and where I've haven't been part of the dominant culture. Where, you know, in East LA, I was, like, you know, there maybe 10 to 12% of our faculty were white, and, like, most of the other were Latinx. When I was in South LA, about 30% of our faculty were white. Almost everybody else was black. All the parents were black. So, like, and I've come during that time and working in those communities to be able to love those communities. And, like, when you love something, or when you love a group of people or a community, like, you will do anything that it takes. And, like, so I've been able to understand, like, the perspective that they're working, that they're coming from, and that it's not just about them doing work in order to make things better for themselves, but, like, it's about us working alongside them in order to dismantle the structures that we created. Not completely dismantle, but at least be able to change them so that everybody is actually afforded an equal opportunity.
So for me, I was raised in a very progressive household, and my parents cared a lot about, you know, were very active in the civil rights movement. They cared a lot about all these issues. I grew up on this. This was dinner table topics for me when I was growing up. And still, I went on this trip with my daughter through Campo called Sojourn to the Past, to the Deep South, 3 years ago. And I learned things on that trip about our, you know, about the civil rights movement and about our history that I never knew. And I felt like I was a person that had immersed myself in these issues for my lifetime. And that was really disappointing to me, because I realized, you know, if even somebody was engaged in it, I was missing out on so much of the history. And so that re-energized me to say, I can't just say I've cared about this my whole life, and that's enough. It re-energized me to say, I've got to get engaged in this and try to move this forward, because I want my kids to live in a more equitable world. This is not an equitable world. And I want, you know, I have a, you know, I'm a white woman of privilege, and I have a daughter who will be a white woman of privilege, and I have a white son who will have more privilege than my daughter, right, in our current culture. And I just want the world to be in a more equitable place. And that trip really pushed me to realize that I was not doing enough. Just caring about it is not enough. You have to engage. So that's why I'm doing it.
I mean, I think, like, one of the common themes that you hear is, like, that we've both experienced different perspectives. And, like, that's what we want for our own kids. And that's what we want for all kids. Just be able to say, like, I can see somebody else's perspective and, like, have that challenge my worldview and not have it completely shatter who I am. But to be able to take pieces of it and say, okay, like, well, I'm going to incorporate this piece and I'm going to incorporate this piece, because then I think, like, that's going to make me a better person and us a better and stronger community.
I'm thinking about this piece that I actually saw the piece this week in a national newspaper. It was about a refugee who left Afghanistan and made her way to Fort McCoy, and now she's in the Bay Area. And the only, like, she went through hell to get here, mm-hmm. like, four countries, 12 days, almost got sent back at the end, finally got there. And the one thing she was missing at the end of her journey was bread. They got all their food and they didn't get bread. So somebody's, like, went through all this trouble to get bread now to Fort McCoy because they just missed this simple thing. And then it brought me back to this really simple thing that I've learned, which is, like, just to be able to sit down and break bread with people and have conversations. Yeah. I think it would, it can get people a long way. I don't know, just take that concept and tell me if there's anything, if you see any opportunities for more dialogue with dissenting or disagreeing opinions or...
Yeah, but I remain open, and I think, Rob, this is true for you. I remain open to engage with anybody who wants to engage on this in a constructive way. But I also am old enough now to know that if someone is not interested in engaging in a constructive way and having an open mind to learning, including me in that conversation, then it's probably a conversation that I'm not going to have, because I have limited hours in the day and I want to engage and do the work that needs to be done. And I think Rob said earlier, you know, they're noisy and they're screaming from the rooftops. I don't know at this point if they're going to hear us. So, yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, we're spending our time having conversations with the coalition of the willing, or at least the coalition of the curious. So, like, these are people that are, like, want to dip their toe in, or they're thinking about it. Like, they're the tipping point. It's not dealing with the extremes.
Well, and I'm noticing that both of you, from your life experiences that you've shared, you've both had an opportunity to break bread mm-hmm. with people from different backgrounds.
Yeah.
I wonder how far you know, for the writer of this article, this op-ed, if he's had that opportunity, or, you know, if there's, if things might shift if people were able to have more real life interactions with people different than themselves.
Well, yeah. I'm not gonna out like specific district staff, but we had a town hall last year, virtually, where we had 4 students speak, of various different racial and ethnic backgrounds. And one of the students, who was a 4.3 GPA, went to an elite school on the East Coast, is now, I think, a junior there, came back to speak about her experiences, and it made the staff person cry. And that staff person essentially said, like, I had no idea. This girl seemed like she had it all together, and that she was going places, and that to know that there was this underlying tension underneath for her, of like where she was being harassed in public places constantly, like really got to this person at the district level. And he was kind of in before, and now is really all in on the work that's being done.
Because at the end of the day, what this is about, and we use the word belonging for a reason. We want kids need to feel a sense of belonging in school, or they're not going to do well in school. Maybe less extreme, if there is a sense of belonging, they're likely to do better in school, right? And they're likely to have a better experience. They're likely to learn more. They're going to be better critical thinkers. They're going to be more prepared to go out in the world. I mean, Campo does a great job sending kids to college. That's great, and I'm proud that our kids go to Campo. I'm happy that I'm here and our kids are there. But I want our kids from Campo to go out to college ready to really think and engage. And if there's a sense of, if there's a lack of belonging or a lack of sense of, you know, safety in the school for students, that's not happening for them, and that's not okay.
Great. And one more question before we wrap. So Rob talked about, like, what is critical race theory? It's the word race that gets inflammatory, and it has created, like, Moraga's not alone, microcosm of the larger world. People across the country are up in arms, like, white people are going to feel uncomfortable, essentially, right?
Right.
So
there's a sense of, I think there's a sense of, I don't want you to make my child feel guilty for being white, and that's not the point of it at all.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So let's just say that critical race theory is a component, like this person cited off the website that it will be involved in English class. So
it doesn't actually say that on the website.
Oh, but let's.
He says that he interprets what it says on the website, that that is critical race theory, but it doesn't say that critical race theory is being.
But why would it be bad if it was? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, I don't think it would be bad if it was.
Do you feel like a little, I'm wondering, does it make you feel almost like any level of defensiveness because of because the term has gotten so politicized?
I mean, I don't think we're defensive about it. I think...
Or uncomfortable, maybe?
No.
I'm frustrated by it.
Yeah.
That's the word I would use, because it's just an inflammatory, it's, you know, it's just a way for people to inflame the issue. And rather than looking at what's actually in the weeds and understanding what we're trying to do, it's just you throw this term out and you think it's going to get everybody up in arms and it's going to stop what's happening. And it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop the work that's happening.
So it sounds like it doesn't exactly say that on the website. Yeah. People feel uncomfortable because it's been made to be this inflammatory term. You gave a little context about that. Let's just say that in English class they were doing critical race theory and they were having their analysis of the critical theory included race and talking about that. What would be the harm in that from your perspective?
I don't think there is harm in that. And I think breaking it down like Rob just did, you know, critically looking at a topic, and if it involves race, then, you know, you're going to be talking about race critically. I don't understand the negative of that.
And let's go to the other. What's the positive, potentially?
Well, I mean, I think it opens people up to think about things in a different way. And ultimately, if we're preparing our kids to leave this high school and go into the world, they should be able to look at the world and think about things in a different way.
They should be teaching lots of different theories.
Yeah.
And, like, but presenting them, and these are theories. Theories change over time based on new evidence and data. You know, like, one example that, like, I've cited before is, like, in 10th grade English this year, in some classes, students are reading Taming of the Shrew, and then they're also reading the feminist response called The Untaming of the Shrew. And, like, that's not critical race theory, but that is a feminist theory. But, like, students are not being told Untaming of the Shrew is right. The way Shakespeare did it is wrong. It's like, no, like, this is just another way to look at it. Let's have a conversation about that.
Right. And all that does is allow kids to broaden their thinking. And to me, that just is a positive. It's going to prepare students to be better stewards in the world. To me, that's a positive. And I don't understand the threat of that for people.
Thank you. Anything else you both want to add? This has been a really interesting conversation.
No, I mean, if more people want to get involved with the work that we're doing, you know, they should definitely reach out to us.
And how can they do that?
They can do that through the CampoDNI.com website or email us directly, rob@CampoDNI.com and Ann@CampoDNI.com.
The other thing I think I would just add, and I think we touched on a little bit, is I think that one of the exciting things about what we're doing is that this is becoming a community process too, not just Campo. Like we started out with a group within Campo D&I that was doing some affiliation with Not In Our Town.
There is an article about that.
And then they've kind of spun off. Like they grew within our, and now they've spun off and they're doing, and they've been working with the town, and we're having a No Hate Week, you know, where the town has decided to go in on that too. So it's not just the district, it's not just Campo, it's now, you know, the town of Moraga, it's, you know, business owners in Moraga are supporting the town council's decision.
The police chief has been involved.
Yeah, this is, as Rob said, this is a movement, and it's broader than just the Campo D&I page where this information was pulled from. It's a coalition of a lot of different people that cares about this and is engaged in it, and people are going to continue to do the work.
I love that. And then I guess just one last thing that I should have asked you earlier. Do you feel like the media amplification of stories like George Floyd's and others that have been very well seen and heard of throughout the country, did that give Camp Olindo parents a little boost to take on these issues? Or
yes.
Like we talked about the time period. Yes?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think the other side of the media coverage of these issues is giving the few people that are screaming loudly against this motivation as well. I think the media on this issue is working both ways. It's also helping amplify the people that are against this work.
And then just a quick logistical detail, how many people are currently involved in your group?
I mean, actively through our subcommittees, we probably have close to 40 to 45, and then we'll get another, depending on the meeting, you know, there's probably another. We have like 200 on our mailing list, and then probably another 50 that come to like regular meetings.
And you wouldn't mind more?
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah, we'd love more.
And one of our things we try to do is reach out to incoming parents, too, because we want freshman parents to be involved. I mean, this is going to be a long, while the train has left the station, this is going to be long work. It's not going to be fixed tomorrow, or, you know, we have to continue to engage in this. So we want to, you know, make sure people know that this, you know, I've got a kid that's going to graduate next year, you've got a kid that's going to graduate the year after that. You know, we need people to come in and help take this over from us and keep moving this thing along for years to come, because it's work that has to continue.
Okay, talk about restorative justice at school and what opportunities you think there are for that.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that the admin and the district are definitely, and the teachers are definitely committed to the idea of restorative justice when issues arise, because it's a teachable moment, and it's not, you know, it's not about punishing kids, it's about having kids learn the tools to be students together and to be respectful of each other and to make sure that there's a sense of belonging at the school. So you know, I think for some people there, you know, it can be frustrating, because when something really bad happens and a kid uses a racial, you know, slur against another student, I get it. I want, you know, the kid should be punished. I see that. But I think for the long term and the work that we're doing, there is a real benefit to the restorative justice piece, because if you just punish, there may not be a learning piece involved.
If there's no dialogue, right?
Right.
Like there's,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be judged for what I did when I was a 16-year-old. I mean, there's, like, so much education that I've done since then. And, like, students shouldn't be, like, expelled. I mean, if they do something heinous enough, but, like, they shouldn't be expelled because they said something, you know, that was or a series of microaggressions or a joke that they made. Like, they should be educated. And, like, that's what restorative justice is about.
And tell me if you agree, but one thing that I found is that when we have such a punitive kind of look at these things, where we want such a, like, you know, draw a line in the sand, so to speak, then I feel like it prevents people from taking ownership of their mistakes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then right. if yeah. we don't own our mistakes, I'm not sure how to grow. Right. Is that the case at the high school level, do you think?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, part of it is, like, Campo doesn't turn kids the way they are, one way or the other. Like, it has the ability to influence it. But their kids are coming to Campo 14 years as a product of their community, their parents and family, the other schools that they've come to, which is why I think it's so important, like Anne brought up, like the work that the town is doing, the elementary schools, the middle school, like they're all doing work also in these areas. Because it's, but like when kids have these moments, when they make mistakes, it is about the education and the reparation of harm that they've done that's going to move the needle forward. It's not just like, well, you know, you're gonna write, I will not say racist things 100 times. Like, it's not about that.
No.
Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, no, it's another tool to expand people's thinking and their engagement in these issues, and to just say what you did is wrong and not explain and engage in why it was wrong doesn't move the needle, like Rob said. That extra piece is really important, and so I'm really glad that the school and the district is committed to that as a way to deal with these issues.
Awesome, thank you so much. Awesome, thank you both for taking the time to talk with me.
Yeah, absolutely, thank you.